Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema here with Benjamin Solak. This is Wednesday. We are, boy, just we can literally say a handful of hours, I think, away from the 2019 NFL Draft officially kicking off. I'm super excited about this, but mainly because we got to, Ben, before we get into some more positions, because that's what we've been doing this week, we got to get to this Frank Clark trade, because this now, we have a new order. We have a switch up in the order. Granted, it's at 29, so it's not like it's total chaos, but it is something different than certainly what was the case yesterday. Ben, what do you think about this overall trade? Because I believe, if I have the details right, Seattle sent Frank Clark to Kansas City. Kansas City gave them their first this year, which is number 29 overall. Their second next year, and then the teams swapped third round picks for this year, correct? Right?
That is
okay,
correct.
Thank you for fact checking me there. What do you think about, you could start either side. If you want to start Kansas City side, we'll talk about that. If you want to start Seattle side, we can talk about that. Which side kind of means more to you?
I want to start Seattle side because you just got a first round pick and a second rounder next year for Frank Clark. You just got a first rounder and a second rounder to not pay somebody $90 million. Which, let's not take away the fact Frank Clark is a very, very good player.
Okay, all right. I thought you were going to get away from that point, but
no. I mean, so Frank Clark has averaged just under 11 sacks over the past three seasons, two of those three seasons in double digits for sacks. But we're talking about you hit him with the tag, and now you don't even have to pay him the tag this year because the Chiefs are going to hit an extension with him, I'm imagining. So I'm pretty sure Seattle gets out from under the tag, but don't quote me on that. Tag might have been finalized. I can't remember. Anyway. But you're not going to be extending this player now. Obviously, the big question now for Seattle is with 21 and 29, are the Seahawks regularly trade back? They regularly move outside of the first round. They're always moving back. You can only move so far back in the first round without getting out of it with 21 and 29. So are they going to stay and make picks? Do they really like this class, something that would be new for Seattle? And so they want multiple first rounders to make moves on it. And finally, Michael Bennett gone. Bruce Irvin gone. And now Frank Clark gone. I mean, on the edge, they have Cassius Marsh and Rasheem Green from last year and Quentin Jefferson. Who's rushing the passer on the outside here? They desperately need – oh, I forgot Barkevious Mingo. And Barkevious Mingo. They desperately need some edge rushers.
Very forgettable.
Yeah. Edge is clearly the number one need for Seattle right now. They've got 21 and 29. Is Furl in the building? Is Cleveland Furl available? Is Montez Sweat a guy they're okay with at 21-29? I mean, Seattle's early splash in the 2019 NFL draft is Seattle trading up into the first round with a huge needed edge and a great edge class, man.
So they have picks 21 and 29, right? So
yes.
How high can they get up with those two first round picks?
What do you mean?
Like if they were to package them, where do you think they could
anywhere they want?
Could they get anywhere they want? You think they could get basically anywhere in the top five?
I mean, I think so.
I mean,
so they better not be messing around.
I mean, at that point, I don't know. I just don't really like what's their plan of attack here? If you're getting rid of the one really key position, like what is Seattle doing now? Like, what is the long term plan for Seattle? We already heard that there was some Russell Wilson demands and whispers that he might not want to be there anymore. So that was kind of weird. And then obviously you move on from Frank Clark. Sure, you get draft picks, but is Seattle contending next year? It's hard for me to say like definitively no, because Russell Wilson's incredible and he pulls wins and games just like out of his butt. And he can do that enough times for Seattle to remain in contention. But I'm almost thinking that Seattle should just use like those two picks or like their second round pick or something like that too. I know they don't have many picks. So actually they might not have a second round pick, right? Does it go one and then three? Like it's an earlier three.
Right. I mean, Seattle came into the season with, or came into the draft, I should say, with only four picks in the 2019 NFL draft. Now, obviously they add the fifth now, which is the second first rounder, but I do believe that they've got a one, now another one, three, a four, and a five. And those are their five picks.
Just give me just use both ones. Move up to number two. San Francisco's going to take the deal. Take Nick Bosa. There. Just do it.
Wow. Trevor is ready. Trevor's willing to risk it all.
What do you have? You have to get a pass rusher at this point. What are you going to sit there and wait for 21 to get a pass rusher? It's not going to work.
I think if they sit at 21-29 and they grab Montez Sweat slash Cleveland Farrell,
he's not going to be there.
Montez Sweat's falling, dude.
He's not going to fall. No, he's not.
Okay.
Farrell, maybe. Oh, Farrell, I will believe.
Farrell or Burns. All right.
Oh, they have Burns at 21. I'm going to lose my absolute poop.
Okay. I'm going to tell you right now. Nick Bosa, Josh Allen, both going top. Those are the first two edge rushers off the board.
Okay.
And then we've got Sweat, Burns, and Farrell. And you think those three are going to all make it to 21. And also, I should say, Rashawn Gary with a torn labrum apparently is also falling down boards.
Okay, well, I'm not drafting Rashawn Gary, so that's...
Seattle would love his type.
If you're drafting Rashawn Gary, just trade up for Bosa.
Listen, I think if you're going to draft blank,
tell me who the 29 is, okay? Okay, I will give you Cleveland Farrell, all right? I will give you Farrell or then maybe Rashawn Gary. Then who are you taking at 29?
They'll take Juan Thornhill. They'll put him at corner.
No, I'd rather have Bosa.
Listen, you're not going to find me disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, if they moved up for Bosa, it would be unbelievable. And also, are we sure? I mean, San Francisco probably definitely makes that trade, but the fact that it is a division rival does freak you out a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, you certainly got to believe. I have this back and forth to people all the time. They talk about not trading into the division. You're not making a deal unless you're thinking you're getting the better of the deal anyways, right? I mean, you want to put yourself in the better position. So if you're doing that and then you're actually doing it against a team in your own division, why would that not actually work as a double positive? Like, why would you live out of fear instead of...
Because you know the other team thinks they're getting a good deal, and so you're worried about that.
Right, but I mean, like, why would you be worried about that? You can only control the things that you can control. So... If you have confidence now, if somebody were to say, no, we'd never trade with anybody in the division because we don't know what's going to happen to him, I'm going to be like, that's a general manager who doesn't have any confidence in what he can do. I don't know. It's just I've always looked at it the exact opposite way of the way people seem to look at it. Like, oh, you can't trade into the division because you're helping him out. No, you're trading them because you're thinking you're getting the better deal. So how is that not like a double positive if you're not just like living in fear? Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. But like, again, we're talking about what you and I would do sitting here
not
on this
about
podcast.
Living
versus,
in fear, Ben.
Listen, time to be bold. Time to be brave. Seattle, call San Francisco. Get number two. Get Nick Bosa. Take Kyler Murray. Call Arizona.
Listen, yeah, Seattle. All right, here's what Seattle does. They trade. Ready for this? Are you ready for this, Ben?
Probably not. I mean, we're
okay.
Quite absurd.
Here's what Seattle does. Takes 21-29, turns him into number two. Or turns him into number one overall, okay? They go up, they get Kyler, they trade Russell Wilson for 6-17 and the Giants next first round pick next year. So they give Russell Wilson to the Giants. Then they got 6-17 and Kyler and three first round picks next year. I'm a genius.
Okay.
Did you follow that?
No. Nope.
Did you follow all of that? I don't know if I did either.
I don't even know if you can recreate it. Should we talk about Kansas City right now? Because
yeah, we can talk about Kansas City. Yeah.
D Ford is gone. Justin Houston is gone. But they've got Emmanuel Ogba via trade.
They must truly think that like D Ford is worthless. Like they've got to think that guy's back is broken, right?
We were confounded about the trade back when it happened.
On paper right now, it looks like Frank Clark, who is better than D Ford, okay? I'm just saying that right now. But they think that Frank Clark is a first round and second round and a loss of a swap of a pick better than D Ford. And that ain't true.
Right.
That ain't true.
Let's see. Frank Clark right now is 25. D Ford is 28. So it was a 3-year difference. So it's really even not that much considerably there. All right. So... I mean, well, like, let's
just a little crazy,
right? I mean, so obviously the Chiefs value Frank Clark more than D Ford. That's very clear by the trades that they put together. Obviously, no team's going to know the health of D Ford better than the Chiefs, so maybe that's a mitigating factor. But I look at this roster right now, right? I've got D Ford and Justin Houston gone, but listen, second round pick last year in Breland Speaks, Tanner Capasigno, second round pick from 2 years ago, 2017, out of Villanova. They've got Alex Okafor brought in from New Orleans, who's a rusher that I like. They got Emmanuel Ogba out of Cleveland, who's a rusher who is good. They have some bodies. And now you're adding Frank Clark to this. And so while I could still like to see them go at edge and get really that more that stand up guy, because obviously with Speaks, with Kapasanio, we're talking about big ends, Ogball, so big end sort of a guy. Okafor and Frank are going to be more of your speed guys, your smaller guys. I'd still like to see them add there. This edge room is solid. It's good. With Okafor, Ogba, and Clark, you have known quantities. And with Speaks and Kapasanio, you expect them to become something. You spent second-round picks on these guys. They need to start producing for you, and really they haven't got much out of them yet, so they need to. You throw in there with Chris Jones, I think we've got a good pass rush here. I think we've got a good pass rush. If they can get the secondary right, which they don't have 29 anymore, but if they can do it, I mean, the Chiefs are clearly all in on 2019, right? I mean, this is clearly the push. This has to be the push.
Yeah, you got to really hope that your development worked out, man.
Right, I mean, like, well, Kapasanio was a reach in 17, and Speaks was a reach in 18. If you like that mold, and I guess, like, you know, Chris Jones is kind of that mold, though he's a bigger player. If you like that mold, go for it, but you got to get it right. If you don't get it right, I mean, it's, you know, it's all screwed. But, like,
we've talked about this before on the podcast, like, most specifically with the Titans and, like, their cornerback situation. Sometimes your chips are just on the table, right? Sometimes you've drafted the guys that you have drafted, and they just need to pan out or they don't. Like, this is, like, you just have to get the most out of the players that you have. So even GMs, there's only so much they can do with, like, roster building. It all comes down to, hey, the coaches have got to get the most out of these guys. You have to make sure that you did your homework in the draft to make sure that these players are worth it, and the ones that are going to work the best for your team. Sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. But I think you are right. I agree with you. The Chiefs are in a situation where these guys just kind of got to go out and play. They've got there's not a lot of resources to keep moving players around. These are the guys are their guys now after this Frank Clark trade, I think. So yeah, I think it's just it's time to put up a shutout for a lot of these guys that, like you said, a little bit of reaches on early on in their careers. But they got to come to fruition. So that's kind of the way I see it. All right, enough of that trade. It's been a good deal talking about that, freaking out about that a little bit. I want to get to a couple other positions because tomorrow I actually have a surprise idea for everybody that I think they're going to enjoy. But let's talk about running backs. Can we talk about running backs really quick?
Absolutely.
How do you feel about this running back class? Like, overall?
No. Please, no. No, thank you.
You just said you were ready.
I'm saying no, thank you. I'm saying I'd like to wait till 2020, or I'd like to go back to 2018. Either one, you leave me. I'll just mulligan on this whole class, man. I can't.
How many running backs are in, like, your top 50? No, that didn't even matter anyways, because I don't even think this draft class is that good, so I don't think that really proves anything.
I feel like we do this every year, where we're like, by the time we reach the end of April, we're like, this draft class isn't even that good. I think it's just because we're angry, because we're done with these players, you know what I mean? Like, I'm so up against the wall with this class. I just want everybody to get drafted and go somewhere so I can yell about somebody else for once. But I have, so I have two running backs with a round two grade or better. I have Josh Jacobs with an early two, and then I have Darrell Henderson with a middle two. And so accordingly, I have two running backs that are in my top 50, Jacobs and Henderson. Next running back that you'd find for me is going to be somewhere in the 70s, 80s. So it's an ugly class, man. It ain't it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
Yep.
My top five, I got Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders, Rodney Anderson, Darrell Henderson, Damian Harris.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have Holyfield up in my top five, but those guys are five in my top six.
I mean, I'm not even stoked about Henderson or Harris, and Anderson obviously has the injury. I think Miles Sanders is good, but he's certainly, like, I think Miles Sanders and Josh Jacobs bring you a lot of three down potential.
Here's the thing,
I guess, like,
the thing with me about Miles Sanders is that, and this is confirmed. This running back class tested unbelievably badly, like, historically badly across the board. We just have bad athletes in this class. And there's one player who tested, like, an above average athlete in, like, all the measures, and that's Miles Sanders. And so to me, like, Sanders is going to be the second running back off the board unquestionably, because it's going to be Jacobs. And then it's just a slew of, you know, running back two through six, where everybody's got different grades of everybody. And there's only one player who athletically checks out. And it's Sanders. Like, and Henderson also, I should say, like, checks out. But he, like, you know, he's an incomplete. Like, he's got a role player's athleticism. Sanders is, like, a full-on complete athlete. And so, to me, like, I don't love his film, but he's running back six for me, because athletically, like he's above Devin Singletary. He's above David Montgomery. He's above Darren Hall. Like because the rest of the guys didn't test well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad class.
Yeah. It is. It's not really a. Are there some, you know, but there's some guys that I like in this. Like Alexander Mattison, I think, is an all around guy that I don't think is getting enough talk. I actually really like Benny Snell. He's my RB8. I don't know what you think of him. James Williams is kind of an interesting guy that I think is a gadget player who can have some specialization roles on an offense. And so, like, it's not that I don't think any of these guys will stick in different ways, but, like, just overall, I think you're right. It's certainly from the athletic standpoint, it's a really athletic-based position, and we really were not given a lot of good athletes in this running back class. It just wasn't handed to us.
Listen, you want a good athlete in this class who nobody's talking about? Do you?
No. So let's move on to that. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
listen,
who is it?
Darren Hall out of Pittsburgh. I've been standing for him.
I like Darren Hall.
He's a good player. And nothing. He's better than Quadri Olsen. He's great on vertical.
He is way better than Quadri.
Young man, really. It's like watching a bulldozer try to take a corner. There's just a lot of beep beeps, backups. It just ain't it. But Hall's ability to win an inside zone, gap power concepts, because his great vertical burst, he's got good enough wiggle to make the second level guy miss. He's got good anticipation. It's a top 10 running back for me. Love this film. Nobody's watched him. I think he's going to go 7th round undrafted, and he's going to end up being a decent part of a committee. Everyone's going to be like, whoa, nobody saw about this guy. Ben did. Watch Darren Hall.
I like Darren Hall. He really impressed me when he was at the Shrine Week, and I think when he was doing Senior Bowl stuff. So, no, I'm a fan. I like him. Let's talk about corners. Let's talk about this cornerback class, and this will be the last thing that we talk about today. Where is is Byron your CB1?
Yes. I like the good players.
Okay. So then people forget that you only like good
strategy
players,
for ranking players. I'll put the good ones at the top.
All right. A good all-around strategy. Who is your CB2?
Greedy. And the thing is, like, at the end of...
Okay. I thought we were going to get cheeky here and I was going to keep going down the line.
No, I mean, well, Greedy is lower for you, isn't he? Yeah, right.
No, Greedy is my 2. You can't not have him as your 2, man. No matter how much you like him, because the only thing that you're betting on with him not being your CB2 is you are taking the attitude portion of his game, which I understand. I'm not saying you're wrong. I get it. But unless you have basically done like an in-depth background with him and with people who know him and everything like that, all of it's just hearsay. Like you could go, oh, well, you know, the effort wasn't there even on the tape when he wouldn't tackle. Dude, he knew he was going to be a lock, like top 10 pick. Okay. Like this happens. Like players do this all the time. They take years. I mean, like Ed Oliver even like led up this year, right? I mean, Nick Bosa took the whole second half of the year off. Like this just like it happens. Like the players get this in their head. So unless you can really like prove to me that there's a track record of this guy, and when I say prove to me, I mean like you've done serious research for it, then I still just can't see. You're betting on him not being the CB2 just because of rumors that you hear, which again, I guess I get. You're allowed to have that. But I'm just like skeptical of it. So when I'm doing my rankings, if I've never sat down with a kid, if I've never sat down with his friends or family or people who know him or agents or this or that or people who have interacted with him directly, all of it's just rumors to me. And all I can do is trust the tape. And this dude's got some really effing good tape when he's on. So that's why, I mean, like, I can't put him in.
And that's the thing is, like, I can't. Greedy takes plays off. I agree with you. Greedy picks his spots to tackle. There's no doubt. But if you can go find me the other guy who's that fluid at that size, I'll gladly put him above Greedy. Thing is, you can't because people don't move like Greedy moves. You know what I mean? And that's what's really, really exciting about him is the fluidity, is the transitional quickness with a guy of his length, with a guy who's able to be physical like he is. Obviously, again, he picks his spots, but he does have those flashes. And so, to me, like, you know, I'm going to my defensive backs coach and I'm saying, listen, like, I don't really like this guy's on-field demeanor. I want you to sit down with him. We're going to sit down with him in Indianapolis. We're going to bring him in for a visit. And I want you to feel him out. And if you think you can motivate him, if you think you can get him up to play, if you think you can get his blood moving, then we're going to draft him and we're going to get a great player at good value because other teams were afraid of this. Now, the issue with that is there was that report a couple weeks ago where, like, no teams have brought Greedy Williams in for a visit. Like, he's been, like, very quiet on the visit trail, which to me is shocking. You're one of the first players.
Why would you not?
There's one of two things.
That doesn't make any sense.
that it feels like that question's already been answered, like at LSU and speaking with the coaches and visiting the program, like during the season, everybody knew like, oh, he's dealing with a nagging injury, or oh, like Greedy already knows he's coming out and so he doesn't really care. Or teams have just completely removed him from contention because of his character. You know what I mean? It's one of the two poles as to why Greedy's not getting visits. So it's going to be very interesting to see where he ends up and kind of what the narrative is on his fit with that team and how they feel about integrating him, because he's a difficult prospect to figure out exactly what he's going to bring in year one, because he kind of had a meh 2018. It was just meh.
Who's your rest of your top five?
Yeah, so three is Amani Arawarie, who is my first non round one grade. Is my first round two guy. Listen, you're
boring. It's a
boring
podcast.
We can get a little freaky deaky. DeAndre Baker is 4. Julian Love is 5. But wait.
Oh,
I've got you.
Disagree.
My sixth corner is Savion Smith out of Alabama. Dang it, Trevor, that's
9,
supposed to be my hot thing. And everybody's like, Ben, why? Savion Smith, whoa. So be original.
Where do you have Jimmy Moreland?
Probably a lot lower than you do. Jimmy Moreland's my corner 18.
Oh, CB8, baby, let's go.
Put me on it.
Let's go. Dude, I mean, like he is going to play one position in the NFL.
Right.
It's going to be nickel. Okay, that's the size profile that he has. But I am a big advocate of, like, you have to have attitude to play corner. You do. You just – it's the nature of the position. You're getting hung out to dry so much. You've got to be running your mouth all the time, going up against wide receivers, getting in their heads. It's all about a psychological game as much as a physical game. He played the nickel cornerback position so well when I watched him play at the East-West Shrine game. I went back and watched his tape. They had this dude playing on outside. He was their main takeaway player. He was getting balls over the shoulder. His ball skills are fantastic. Yes, he's got the shorter size profile, but I'm talking about just making this guy a strictly nickel player. And for people who have read my work and who have listened to this podcast, everybody knows that I think the nickel cornerback position is huge in today's NFL. It is the new base, no doubt about it. Jimmy Moreland is going to be a quote-unquote starting cornerback, and he's going to be well worth the draft pick that you give for him, I think, really. Anywhere, dude, I draft Jimmy Moreland like rounds 3 and 4, like for real. So, I mean, that's where I'm picking this dude. I think he makes an immediate impact. He's got so much speed. He's got swagger. He's got strength, and he's got ball skills to not only pick passes off, but a mentality to take him back to the house. That's an added over the top that I love about
him. Here's my issue. Here's my
give me that corner, man. Seriously.
Nickel corner is set up. Corners are the new base. Nickel corners are a starting position, but our fundamental understanding of the nickel corner and the prototype for the position, I think, needs to change, because the slot prototype is changing. Like, we're now seeing, we've got our shifty white slots. We've got a billion of them, but we're also seeing a heavy proliferation of big slots and a much greater increase of tight ends playing in the slot position. And so when we have our nickel defender, when we have our overhang defender, That can be a smaller, shiftier guy when you're going against the Danny Amendolas and the Albert Wilsons and the Julian Edelmans of the world. But when you're going up against the Larry Fitzgeralds and the Zach Ertzes and the Evan Ingrams, that can't be Moreland. That's got to be somebody else. I need a different cover man for that role. So while nickel is the new base, Moreland is a starting corner. I think he's that smaller nickel is a situational player, you know, and like, I don't think you want to be spending a third or a fourth on that role.
No, I agree with what you're saying, but I don't necessarily think that the time that he is going to be spent off the field would make his draft pick value any less than a third or fourth still. Because, I mean, this is just the way that it is. You're going to have an arsenal on your defense. Like, you're going to have guys that come in and out. That's, like, just the way that it is. So, like you said, when teams go tight end heavy or when they go more, like, shifty slot, you have to have both of those guys on the team. And it's not like you can go week in and week out and be like, well, this week we played it well because we got the positional value correct. And the other week we didn't because they didn't have the right guy in there. Like, you're going to need both a hyper athletic safety, like say like, you know, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson or something like that, where a guy who could come in and be athletic and play against tight ends and stick with him against this new age and mismatch in the NFL. But then the other weeks, you're going to have Jimmy Moreland. And that, like, I would rather be on the forefront of having a slot rotation that is elite. Like, I know how to cover mismatches no matter what team in the NFL I'm going up against week in and week out, because that's how you're going to win. Because certainly in the playoffs, you could go up against an array of different teams. One week they might have a tight end. The next week they might have a shifty slot receiver. You can't go, oh, wow, well, we were more prepared for this one than we were the other one, and I guess like our value was technically right in the draft. No, no, no. Like, you need both guys. So I think I'm emphasizing the depth on the nickel coverage role, maybe more than you are, but I think you're going to need, yes, I don't get me wrong, I agree with you. You're going to need a different guy other than Jimmy Moreland to complete kind of like that defensive rotation.
Right.
But I still want Jimmy Moreland. And like, I still think that drafting him in the third or fourth, like, is fine. But
it's
that's
like what we say, like, wide receiver
room
should be basketball teams. You should have guys who fill different roles, but the corners are covering the wide receivers, or the secondary is. So you should have corners who, like, basketball teams, they should be able to fill different roles. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I hear what you're saying in that regard.
Right.
But, yeah, Moreland's love for me. As far as, like, nickel defenders, I like David Long out of Michigan. I like Montre Hardage out of Northwestern a little bit better as nickel guys.
I didn't watch enough David Long.
I mean, so, like, David Long is a really good technical player. He does a lot of things well. But when you're smaller, growing up against big receivers, there's just things that you can't do. Like, he's just physically limited, and that's fine. Like, he's a quality player, and he's going to be a good depth piece. He's got special team value, but it's hard for me to value him super high because he just lacks the ideal physical traits. Where did you land on Rockyson?
Yep.
I have Rockyson at 12, six, and I struggle. I struggle to get my head around Rockyson as the eventual top 40, top 45 pick he's going to be. He's physically gifted and he's sloppy, and that's the reality of being a few years at the position, and that's okay. That's very okay. But to me, like, I'm not going to be taking you round one, round two for you to use poor technique and draw penalties. You know what I mean? Like, I need you to take time.
You're betting on potential. No, you're betting on potential. No question. And I think there's a lot of corners. You know, Justin Lane's another one. There's plenty of corners that have a lot of potential. But we got to wrap it up here because this is the end of the podcast. That was a little overview of the trade. Couple of extra positions tomorrow. I'm really excited about what we're doing tomorrow. Again, I'm not going to give it away. I'm going to tease you guys a little bit. Make sure you tune in. It is draft day tomorrow, Ben.
Oh.
I am so, so excited for it. It's going to be a blast. We're going to have a lot of fun. And especially on the podcast, we're going to do tomorrow's episode. Tomorrow's episode is going to be the perfect way for you guys to get ready for Thursday night. Until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.